Q.
I got something here. I want to see if you know what this is.
A cube.
A cube. That's right.
Yeah, I like that.
Hello and welcome from deep inside the frontal lobe of Jolly Roger's studio.
That's a nice one.
Ooh, you like that?
I did not anticipate that. I did not see that coming.
I have a hard time believing that, Max.
That's
but yeah.
From out of left field, man.
Right. Or maybe right field this time.
Right. Frontal lobe could be left or right. Yeah,
it's hard to find it.
Hello, everybody. The Q Filmcast. Once again, yes, and if you don't yet know, we are the show which brings to you our review of a particular film currently streaming on Netflix Instant.
Yeah.
We gather here each week, each and every week.
Yep.
Max.
Each and every week.
Thanks for backing me up here at Jolly Roger's studio.
No problem, buddy.
Where we go around the table to tell you what we thought of it.
Right.
That and our weekly top three list, always inspired by the movie in question. So no matter how you tuned in or how you got here, thank you so much for doing so. We do appreciate it. If you'd like to keep up with us, or if you're compelled to keep up with us, it's punalicious.
It's punalicious.
You can do it any way you want to. Twitter, Facebook, all iTunes, etc. It doesn't matter. You can go Google.
You can Google.
You can even Bing us.
You could Google Plus.
You could.
Bing.
I was made fun of the other day for going to Bing. One of my coworkers.
Ask Jeeves.
Yeah.
It's got a dog pile.
Right. Old dog pile. Someone made fun of me the other day for going to Bing. He come by my computer. He says, using Bing? Like, so what? It has a prettier start page.
It does.
Listen, forget all that. Forget everything I said. You go to Bing. Bing us, please. Somebody do it. Right. Or you could, better yet, just go to theqfilmcast.net. Yeah, .net. See that? If you're compelled, if you feel the compulsion to do that, because there it's your catch-all. You can follow us any way you want. You can listen to this show on there if you or you can,
no other shows, only this one.
I don't know. Right. You can listen to any of the other reviews that we have. Give us our feedback on how we did. Let us know what you think of the film.
Right.
And we're talking about the films in question. Every week we bring one in. This week is no different.
Nope.
Yeah, and let's get into what we're doing here. It's a bit different.
It is.
Week three.
Yeah, you're right. Week three, I had to think about it. You're right. Thank you, Max.
I got your back, buddy.
Yeah. We're doing tens. This is a round of tens.
Perfect tens.
Birth by James, because Savage, you came up with this idea. You want to explain what we're doing here in the queue?
Movies that we feel that deserve a 10, a perfect rating, for whatever reason, whether it's personal or technical, we think that it's a 10.
You're surfing through Netflix. You're looking at the titles. You say, hey, to me, that film's a 10.
Yep.
We're going to bring it in here, and you challenge the rest of us to either get to 10 with you or tell us why it's a 2 or whatever it might be, right?
And we're not talking about the Bow Turkey.
Yeah, that's the deal.
Yeah, that's
I like the concept.
That's basically
last week, we had a 10. Week before that was my selection with my 10, and this week it's the producer. But before we do all that, let's get into some proper introductions, guys. We heard from him previously. Beautiful, illustrious voice, and that is, I think it's his.
The beautiful, illustrious voice?
I don't know. I'm trying
it
to get
illustrious.
I'm trying to give you a good lead in,
I did work in radio for 6 years.
Yes,
Whisper
he did.
Sweet nothing's
that's crazy.
I'm not doing that. Or maybe it's not him. Maybe there's like other people living inside him, and it's not his that's actually not him we've been hearing all this time.
Yeah. No, it's me.
We're talking about Max Gumbo Johnson.
Hi.
Yeah, here we are. Once
How
again,
are you,
buddy.
Fella?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm doing good. I'm doing really, really well.
Great. I like the new shirt.
let that sit right there. Don't want to talk about that.
Right.
Let my shirt be a mystery.
There you go.
That's fine with me. There mystery machine. Yeah. You're the Freddy to my Velma.
My shirt doesn't have pockets on it, though. That's the one thing that bothers me. There's no pockets on mine. No chest pockets on
mine. Okay, Dad.
All right. Let's move on to the producer. Let's move on to Adam, the greatest producer in the history of this Q Filmcast. He's over there. Can I call you Father Adam? Can you be Father Adam?
Yes, my child.
I like that better. The laughter coming deep from inside. James, hard sub Savage.
Yeah, I'm possessed of laughter. What's
yes,
up,
you
Maestro?
Are. Sometimes you really are. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What's up, Maestro?
You know, you have the laughter of three people. I wouldn't doubt if there's three people in there laughing in synchronicity, Max.
In synchronicity. Right. I missed it.
Yeah, just don't play it backward.
No, I had a pretty good week, Savage.
Yeah, good. Yeah. Glad to hear it.
I had a great week. You want to know why I had a great week?
I want to know why.
Well, I'll tell you what, Max.
Inquiring minds want to know.
Yeah, and howdy to you.
Howdy to you.
I'll tell you this
howdy,
much.
Captain.
At no time did a young, unruly, unhinged, homicidal girl punch me in the nuts?
Oh, that's always good.
Not
that's
this week, anyway.
I haven't paid for that.
Last week.
Yeah, at no time did I fall down a set of stairs. My head turned around.
Oh, yeah. Mm. I hate it when that happens.
Don't you? I can't stand that.
Yeah. Once a week for me.
You know, at no time did I have to call the exterminator to get rats removed from my attic that weren't really there.
That's awesome.
It's just raccoons in your attic. Right?
That's the news I love to hear.
All kinds of stuff. Right. I can't remember what else.
You didn't have to replace your crucifix because you couldn't get the blood off of it.
Or other things.
No.
Here we go. Let's move on.
It's a good week.
It's a fantastic week, and I could go on and on why it's fantastic. Right. Probably too many times. But, producer, let's go back to you. The game is played. We pick a film. It's your selection. It's a 10. What film are we talking about if you're too dumb to not know?
Right.
The Exorcist.
Ooh. 1973 Exorcist. We're talking about Ellen Burstyn, Jason Miller, and William Friedkin's.
William Friedkin.
Billy Friedkin.
Or Billy. You think he ever went by Billy?
He goes by Billy.
Okay. Max, blow my mind. When we talk about William Friedkin, I'm terrified now of fried chicken and the devil.
That's Killer Joe. That's The Exorcist.
Yeah. Right. What else?
Gosh, Cruising, which I've never seen.
He's terrified of that.
It keeps coming up.
I would really like to see an unedited copy of that movie. I would really want to see it.
Adam has one underneath his mattress.
No,
he doesn't.
Oh.
He's asked.
What else?
French Connection.
The Bug. Bug.
Sorcerer.
Sorcerer, one of my favorite movies of all time.
12 Angry Men remake.
Hadn't seen that.
That's good.
Don't need it.
How about To Live and Die in L.A.?
Gosh.
William Peterson. Yeah.
So I think we know what sort of films this guy makes.
Awesome ones.
Literally get under your skin. And in the case of Bug, get under your skin.
That's probably my least favorite of his movies I've seen.
God, I love Bug.
I loved Bug. Bug wigged me out. It has Michael Shannon in it.
Yeah.
Or was he Bug. Mike Shannon at
he
that?
Was Michael.
But Sorcerer has Roy Scheider in it.
Yeah, but
and it's Sorcerer.
Yeah, but in Fried Chicken,
and Joe
and
Killer
Joe, he had Matthew McConaughey.
In Killer Joe, you had sex with fried chicken. Let's move on.
Here we go.
This guy's got an interesting filmography.
Yes, he does. But this is the one I would say he's most known for.
We're
talking about The Exorcist, 1973, based on the 1971 novel by William Peter Blatty.
Yeah.
Inspires a top three producer. They all do. What did this inspire top three wise?
Best practical effects in movies.
Yeah.
No, this is a movie full of them.
Would this rise to the top in your
opinion? Absolutely, it is. I mean, it would. Mm-hmm. I mean, because we can't reference this in our top three.
Yeah.
if we could have referenced this in our top three, I would be like, oh, yeah. that scene in The Exorcist.
Right.
I tell you what, I read up a bit on that and how this film was put together, researching this film. They hired all the pros, man. They're like, we're going to do it right, and we're going to do it right only. So we're getting this guy. This was a plethora of the best of the business at the time that could do this. So, if you've seen the film, keep listening, see if you agree or disagree. If not, keep listening, and we dare you to cue this one up yourself. All right, guys, let's move along. Here we go. The Exorcist, 1973. Ratings. We do this every single week. No different here. We're going to talk about what the critics gave this film. And Max Gumbo Johnson, IMDb, gave what to The Exorcist, 1973?
IMDb, got to be high. It's 8.2.
8.0, close.
What? Wow, I was aiming low.
Some people just can't handle it.
Yeah,
well, I mean, some people just can't handle it. Yeah,
yeah.
We'll get into some more of the trivia and stuff that I read up on. But man, getting into the research on this was fascinating.
Oh yeah,
about what it did in 1973 to the audience, or to me the other week. I don't know. We'll talk about that in a bit. Rotten Tomatoes. Savage.
Yeah.
We're talking critics. We're talking users. Yeah. You know the routine. Something percentage-wise.
Yeah. Rotten green juicy tomatoes.
maybe rotten green tomatoes.
Rotten green tomatoes.
How many rotten green tomatoes?
90%.
Close, man. 87.
All right.
Yep.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Still, I mean, come on. It's 87.
Yeah.
It's not bad.
I thought it would have been higher. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I did too. Well, I guess the cat's out of the bag.
Yeah, right.
All right, let's talk about what we have in this film. Let's get into it. Producer, you ready?
I am.
All right, I'm compelled, and here we go. The Exorcist, William Peter Blatty's 1971 bestseller and the last known U.S. Catholic-sanctioned exorcism, is the source material for Friedkin's movie of the same name, of course with one small difference. Where the book takes us to hell through a 12-year-old boy, the film gets us there with Regan, a 13-year-old girl played by the then-unknown Linda Blair. But just like the book and the boy in it, she wakes up one day suddenly prone to fits of rage and bizarre behavior. Reagan proves quite a handful for her actress mother, Chris McNeil, played by Ellen Burstyn, although Blatty reportedly based the character on his next-door neighbor at the time, Shirley MacLaine. There's a little in-synopsis trivia for you. When Reagan gets completely out of hand, the doctors are left clueless. Chris calls in young priest Father Karras, played by Jason Miller, who becomes convinced that the girl is possessed by the devil and that they must call in an exorcist, namely Father Marin, played by Max von Sydow. His foe proves to be a no-run-of-the-mill demon, and both the priest and the girl suffer numerous horrors during their struggles, requiring sacrifices of the deepest order where only the struggle of good and evil can exist. The Exorcist received a theatrical release in 2000 in a special edition that had 11 minutes of footage trimmed from the original release and digitally enhanced Chris Newman's Oscar-winning soundtrack. So there you go, a little bit on the film. At least I'll let you know what you're getting into.
Did you say in the book it was a boy? I don't remember that. I read the book like 3 times. No. I remember being a girl.
No, it's about Reagan.
The original story.
The original story that he based it on. Okay, yeah. I got you.
Well, in any regard.
Yeah.
In any regard, there you go. That's The Exorcist 1973. Good time right now. Take a break, listen to a trailer, see what kind of sounds come out of your earphones right here. Right. We'll come back, talk a bit about the film, tell you what we thought of it, and we'll be back in just a minute. Here you go, Exorcist 1973.
Somewhere between science and superstition, there is another world. The world of darkness. Nobody expected it. Nobody believed it. And nothing could stop it.
There are no experts. You probably know as much about possession as most priests. Look, your daughter doesn't say she's a demon. She says she's the devil himself.
I'm telling you that that thing upstairs isn't my daughter. Now, I want you to tell me that you know for a fact that there's nothing wrong with my daughter except in her mind. You tell me you know for a fact that an exorcism wouldn't do any good. You tell me that!
The one hope. The only hope. The Exorcist.
Q Filmcast, and there is The Exorcist 1973, Adam's Perfect 10.
Yeah.
And the drama unfolds. Let's see how close we can get to it, Max. You ready?
Okay.
Let's do this.
I'm ready. I was born ready.
I was born ready.
Yeah, you're just possessed with emotion
right now.
2 years
before this movie came out, I was born ready.
Here we go, guys. Let's talk a little bit about trivia here. A little bit of facts and figures about the film. Some things.
Things.
Some nuggets.
Right.
Did you know that actor Jason Miller is the father of actor Jason Patrick?
No, I didn't know that.
And is also the son-in-law of Jackie Gleason.
So Jason Miller is the son-in-law of Jackie Gleason.
Correct.
Oh,
so
okay.
He married Jackie Gleason's daughter.
The math adds up, doesn't it?
I got it. Okay.
Yeah.
I got you.
Did you know that Roger Ebert, while praising the film, believed the special effects to be so unusually graphic, he wrote, that it received an R rating and not an X is stupefying. Theaters provided, at the time of release, Exorcist barf bags.
I wish I had one of those. I would totally wish I had one of those.
Would you not love to have? I bet that's worth something. For a movie collector, that has to be worth something.
Oh, yeah.
Did you know, guys, that the producers sought to have Jamie Lee Curtis and almost did get the role of Reagan McNeil, but her mother, Janet Lee, refused? I wonder why.
She read the script.
She read the script.
Yeah, she read the script. Right. Did you know the scene where Reagan projectile vomits at Father Karras was only required one take? The vomit was intended to hit him in the chest. Instead, the plastic tubing that sprayed the vomit accidentally misfired, hitting him in the face. The look of shock and disgust while wiping away the vomit is genuine. They were planning on scrapping it. They looked at it and said no. That's a gift.
How can you keep not keep it?
Right?
They did.
Well, they did keep it.
I mean, how could you even think about not keeping it?
Did you know this is the first horror film to be nominated for Best Picture?
No, I didn't know that.
I have so much stuff here.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Did you know that the bedroom set had to be refrigerated to capture the authentic ice breath of the actors?
I did know that.
Yeah. There's all kinds of funky stuff in this, man, as far as...
They went above and beyond.
Trivia and stuff. It just goes on and on. Fantastic, though. Did you know that upon its initial theatrical release, the film affected so many audiences so strongly that in many theaters, paramedics were called?
Wow. Yeah. I can imagine.
Did you know that in Europe, and especially in the UK, this film was completely banned? Mm-hmm. It led to secret bus trips called Exorcist Bus Trips, where people would go underground to watch it.
Yeah, it was one of the video nasties for a while.
Yeah, it was. Did you know that Alan Burstyn received permanent spinal injury during this film?
Yes, I did know that.
Yeah, because they hooked him up to harnesses, yanked him around. I like this last trivia, and we're going to end it here. Did you know what basically got Linda Blair the role? To test her, they said, excuse me, do you know what masturbation is? And she said, well, of course I do. Don't you? Friedkin thought that her response was better than any of the others. He said, on that alone, she gets the role.
Well, and she nailed it. No pun intended.
Yeah. Let's move along, guys. Got a lot to talk about. You know, we do not use thumbs up, thumbs down.
No, that is so possessed.
It's so possessed. It's so vomit stained.
Devil may care.
Let's talk about how we're going to rate this film, Max. What's it going to be?
When 1 through 10, Christ, how many times does Christ compel you?
How many times does Christ compel you? Adam, we know what yours is. 10. Good enough. We're going to get into scenes here in a bit. No secret there. You set the bar at 10.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
This is a perfect film, from the screenplay to the directing to the visual effects, from the original source material, you name it. This is absolutely brilliant filmmaking.
Yeah. Let's see if we can get on board with you. Yeah.
He's a 10.
Let's go around.
There are
the table.
People out there that say spot on, sir. Let's see if Max Gumbo Johnson. Gumbo, Gumbo is kind of green colored, isn't it?
No, it's more of a dark chocolate brown if you do it right.
He's thinking of ochre.
For some reason.
I don't put ochre.
Yeah, Gumbo. Now, you know the spiel. You know the routine. We're talking about Exorcist 1973. How many times does Christ compel you?
It's a 10 for me, too. This is a total 10. I mean, this is literally one of the greatest movies ever made.
I can't wait to hear in
detail.
Say
what you want about it. It's one of the greatest movies ever made. It's a marvel of technical achievement.
Savage. Yeah. James Hartsub, savage. Yeah. How many times?
I'm waiting for the big letdown right here.
Would Christ compel you?
Turn your head around.
Yeah, you might end up.
You.
I'll be like spewing green stuff at you. Possibly. We'll see. But how many times does Christ compel you?
Oh, come on, man. This is a perfect film. This is an absolutely masterpiece of filmmaking. This is a 10. Of course it's a 10. This is one of the best films ever conceived, ever made.
Have we ever had a perfect score?
Nope.
Thanks to Max.
Thanks to me, apparently.
And I do want to throw this out. Matt told me today that The Exorcist is a perfect 10 as well for him.
All right, Hoodie. Hoodie from, you know what, like, I'll tell you what, how about the spirit of Hoodie is here?
And he gives it a 10?
I'll tell you what, let's go ahead. We were going to do 40 as the top. We're bringing back the spirit of Hoodie.
Right.
50 on the board, man. And you know what, I'm not going down from it. This is a perfect 10. We have a perfect score.
The first 50.
The first 50 for The Exorcist.
I knew who picked it? This guy.
The guy we make fun of.
The guy that picks the obvious 10.
Yeah, exactly.
That's
right.
Some low-hanging fruit,
brother. It
doesn't
matter. I'm the only one that has ever picked a perfect film from all of us.
Not bad, Adam. Can I rip through real quickly what I had on this film? And I'm seriously going to step back.
Are you going to get your stuff out of the way?
I am. Right here, right now. Let me tell you why this is a 10 to me. First of all, guys, I totally agree. Landmark piece of cinema. Before Jaws, before Raiders, before E.T., before Titanic. There was this, man. People lined up for this. It took the collective breath out of the movie-watching public in 1973, kicked the door open on just how effective a film could make you feel. And watching it again the other night, it has lost absolutely nothing. The scope is vast, and if you stare beyond its vomity surface, there's a subtle, beautiful film here. It's steeped in irony, because in this movie, you have green vomit, sacrilegious excrement, violent, evil masturbation, death, murder, torn flesh, right? All this stuff.
Yeah.
Yet we're on the verge of talking about this film, and I could care less about any of that stuff. The real conversation about this movie doesn't even exist there. The movie, for me, has always been an illusion, right? Like those pictures in 1992, you'd stare at for a long time, and finally the picture would come through.
The hidden magic.
The hidden magic. This film, I love this movie. Everything about it. Everyone associated with this film, like you said, Savage, perfectly in place and perfectly cast. It's a gut punch of reality and emotion wrapped in pure intellect. As much as I want to remember Burstyn's screams and F-bombs, those scenes where she sheepishly answers the detective's questions come to mind first. Or like Karis, right? As much as I want to talk about his puke loogie, it's his silent dream that haunts me. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
That's why this film is unrelentingly perfect. It's a film about the mystery religion, the things that we can't see. It's a movie about the battle between good and evil, whether it's inside us or anywhere else. And I'm talking about the conflict inside of Karis, not Reagan. See where I'm going? Mm-hmm. Deep film, man. I got to go perfect 10, gripping all the way. There you go. Adam's 10. Adam's perfect 10. We went around the table. Perfect score here.
Everybody's 10.
First time. Yeah. So let's talk about this film, Max. Let's start it out with you. Yeah. Talk to me about a scene, something that defines this movie for you and something that rises to the surface when you discuss it.
I'll tell you what. In the whole history of films, there have been very few horror films that have really gotten a lot of respect. There's like a handful of
them.
And for something like this to come along and just completely blow away the general viewing audience and have people coming into the theaters and just passing out and just running out in horror is amazing.
Yeah.
And this, I mean, it got nominated for Best Picture. And you got somebody like William Friedkin on board to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy put these people through hell to make this movie. So the fact that it's a horror movie that got all this praise and all this controversy behind it and just so much news going on behind this thing that it holds up this well 40 years later is amazing.
Astonishing.
It's really astonishing. And not only does the film itself hold up, the effects hold up.
Absolutely.
The story holds up. The message in the story holds up. This is a timeless film. There is nothing out of place in this movie at all.
No, not at all.
You could say there's some stuff that dates it a little bit,
but it's not dated.
But
at
it's
all.
Not dated. It's completely timeless. There is nothing in this film that people 100 years from now can't watch and go like, "Oh, that's awesome."
Yeah.
And for that to be achieved in a horror movie is just, it blows me away.
You know, I would tell you that sometimes time does good things to things. And to film, it can do that. Because I look at this film now, it's 40 years old. So now you have the aspect of the conversation where you can say, I can't believe they did that 40 years ago.
Yeah.
And you gain more respect of it. At the time, this was the best the business had to offer. Well, now you have CGI. You have all this stuff that you could put in there.
It would ruin this film.
It would ruin the film. So on that aspect alone, it actually gains for me. You know what I'm saying?
It totally worked. I was listening to a podcast today. I can't remember what it was. And somebody sent in a question and said, I heard there are rumors of a remake of Jaws. I'm like, you can't capture that again.
No, you can't.
You just can't. Because the problems associated with making that film are what made it so great.
Yep.
And I think that's a similar case with The Exorcist. The trouble, the logistics they went through to make this thing are what made it so great. And Dick Smith, who we talked about on the show, when did he die? About a year ago?
Yeah, just when that long ago.
That guy, my God, if you had more people in Hollywood doing the stuff that guy did, like he did on this movie, it's just there's nobody that can even come close to that guy's standards on makeup and effects. Yep. And
you know his assistant was Rick Baker, right?
Yeah, I know that. But I mean, even Rick Baker's been around for what, 30 years now?
Well, since this.
Well, since
40.
40 years now. So I mean, who's taking their place?
K&B.
CGI guys. K&B's been around for 25, 30 years.
You know what? You watch this, and here's what I'm getting from your conversation, and actually from watching the film, is that have we lost a bit of craft with CG?
They've lost a lot of craft.
What have we lost? Because I will put this up craft-wise against anything. Savage, what do you think?
Absolutely. I mean, I don't know that the craft has been lost. I think it's just been put aside for easier versions of it that, in my opinion, are inferior versions of it.
Way inferior.
You know, I mean, if CGI has its place, and when it's done right and done well, it's done right and done well. But this would have suffered from CGI. I mean, what makes this timeless is that the craft work. Mm-hmm. One of the things I find most fascinating is this is one of the absolute best book translation films you'll ever see.
It was great.
You can literally read the book.
I've never read the book.
It's the film. There's only like one subplot with the butler and the maid and the Nazi thing that's kind of referenced in the film. That's out of the book. Otherwise, you can literally read the book and watch the movie and read it word for word.
Because I think I've read the book 3 or 4 times.
Yeah, because Blatty did the screenplay.
Yeah, he did do the screenplay.
So,
and he was quite pleased with the movie as well.
Oh,
how could you not be? Because there's films that are made, there's filmmaking. This is film engineering to me.
Yeah.
It's so gone over and so combed out and so thoroughly thought out that it's a machine of filmmaking. From the premise, from the craft work, to the acting, to the way the scenes lead out from one to the other.
Yeah, and every scene is beautiful. I mean,
I like what you said a second ago about... you know, not just the story, but if you notice, I don't know if you hadn't watched it in a while or read the book, every character in this movie, from the mom to Reagan to the, both of the priests and to the cop.
Yeah.
I love the cop in this.
They all have a bit of an arc to their story. Mm-hmm. All of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As small as it is.
Yeah.
They all have a bit of an arc, and that, you know, when the cop and Father Karras are at the track, I love that scene. As minuscule and as almost non-impactful as that scene is on the film, it's still such a great, deep meaningful yes. scene.
See how good that is? We're talking about films, things in this film that are so unsubtle. There's nothing, when people consider this film, they go to all the stuff that is so obviously not subtle.
Yeah.
But when you sit
and
back.
There's plenty of that.
And it's wrought with it. But right. what you're left with are the things that are subtle, like the conversation he's talking about. You know, he says to him, well, did you ever tell you look like somebody? He said, well, did you ever hear yeah. that you look like Paul Newman?
Right.
You know, I mean, why am I remembering that line?
Because right. it's so well written. It's
from
so
this
good.
Movie right. in the middle of all the vomit.
Right.
Because a good horror film, I think, this epitomizes it. When the horror moves away and it melts away and it drips away
yeah.
and you're left with something else that is just as good,
yeah,
boy, that's effective.
It is. It's totally. If you can't tell a human story, and that's what makes a good horror movie, you know, stands head and shoulders above most of the dreck you get these days.
Yeah.
And I've said this time and time again. That's the problem with being a horror fan. You've got to watch so much garbage to get to one good movie.
Yeah, you do.
And, yeah, right.
But when you get something like this, and you find that human element in it, and it tells a story.
Yeah.
And the horror is actually sort of behind it, and. The horror comes from actually having to experience this and go through it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what makes it effective. And you can watch this stuff on screen, and you can totally relate. God, my God, what if this was my daughter?
Yeah.
yeah.
Or what if that was me?
Because it is a simple story. I mean, it's a mother trying to save her daughter's life. Ellen yeah. Burstyn is an absolute powerhouse in this.
To behold
everybody
itself.
Everybody is.
Yeah, it, really, everybody is. You're right. I mean, but Ellen mm-hmm. Burstyn does seem to, she just can't take your eyes off of her.
No.
I mean, at all. And Jason Miller is just like the perfect cast for
He's
for
perfectly
Father Chris.
Cast because you can see the anguish in his face throughout the entire thing. There's something so deep-seated in him
yeah.
that is troubling him.
Yeah.
He's at war and at odds with something internal, and that is just on the guy's face.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he came back for the only good sequel to this movie.
I'd never seen it.
Yeah, number three.
The third one, yeah.
It was pretty good.
It was good.
You know what we need to do? Take a quick break once more. Let's listen to a piece, come on back, and talk about scenes specifically, okay? And we're talking about Exorcist. Be right back.
Are you comfortable, Reagan?
Yes.
How old are you?
12.
Is there someone inside you?
Sometimes.
Who is it?
I don't know.
Is it Captain Howdy?
I don't know.
If I ask him to tell me, will you let him answer?
No.
Why not?
I'm afraid.
If he talks to me, I think he'll leave you. Do you want him to leave you?
Yes.
I'm speaking to the person inside of Reagan now. If you are there, you too are hypnotized. I must answer all my questions. Come forward and answer me now.
There it is, Exorcist. We're talking about it here at the Q Filmcast,
yeah.
queued up by Adam, the producer. Let's get into some scenes. Let's sure. burn through these, because where do you start, where do you end?
Man.
I'll let you guys concentrate on the horror. I want to go a little deeper,
right.
okay? First of all, if we're going to talk about scenes, let's go ahead and talk about this right away, okay? And we'll get into some other stuff, but why don't we talk about the opening real quick?
Yeah, loved it.
I find that so relevant because
Iraq.
It opens up in Iraq, northern Iraq. Watching it this time with a real deep critical eye, I think that is a fantastic opening because it's telling you what you're about to watch is very old.
Yeah.
It knows no language. It knows no borders. It's beyond your control. Very, very necessary scene. And there's a couple things here that tie into the rest of the movie. At one point, Marin, who's in Iraq as the film starts, and
yeah.
you see him much, much later. He pretty much just bookends the movie.
Yeah.
He stares at a guy with these pale white eyes,
mm-hmm.
and later on, towards the middle of the film, Kara sees those same eyes on the subway.
Yeah.
It all ties in. I thought that showed a great backbone to the film as far as the spirit of it. It's
yeah.
timeless, it's old, it's evil, and you don't understand it, and it can come from anywhere. I got a lot out of that. Max, did you like the opening scene?
I love the opening scene.
Yeah.
Oh, find an old Pazuzu there.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people say, I love the film, but the beginning was stupid. Why, if you just cut it out, that's better. I had people
no.
say that. I heard it said.
Well, that's probably some stupid person's opinion. But I tell you, and I hate to keep going back to the book, but, you know, you've got to cut stuff out to get it into the movie. But the book opens the exact same way.
Yeah.
yeah.
And they explain a lot more in the book, but that little thing he finds is you know, it's called Pazuzu.
Yeah,
that's
Pazuzu.
The name of the demon. Mm-hmm. A lot of people think she was possessed by the devil in this movie.
Yeah.
She wasn't.
Yeah. It's a lesser devil.
Yeah, he's just one of his minions, demons. I guess.
One of his minions.
But there's that you know, that it goes back to that almost that insert shot of the guy with the white face.
Sure, yeah.
That everybody remembers. And I'm assuming that's Pazuzu. But, yeah, it goes back to, it almost makes a connection between him and Reagan getting possessed by this demon. And it almost makes it a matter of fate. Like,
yeah.
He knew this was going to happen. And he'd done this before.
Yeah, and I love
that
whole
thing. He got called
in
for that.
Well, you know, he is the sheriff.
Yeah.
He's the sheriff. And
High Noon.
It's High Noon, man. Right. But, you know, that's why it's a loose parallel. But I want to make it because at the end of the movie, I remember thinking, man, first time I saw this, it takes so long to see Marin again.
Yeah.
But at the end, when he comes in, you realize, oh, hell, he's battled this demon before.
Yeah.
And the demon says, Marin, the one walks in.
Yeah.
And even in the recording,
yeah.
when he plays it backwards,
yeah.
I listened to that again, the demon saying, this one knows the priest. He knows Marin. He knows mm-hmm. the priest.
Yeah.
Marin's a badass.
Yeah.
He is the sheriff.
He is the exorcist.
Yeah. Yes, he is.
Yeah, he mm-hmm. is the exorcist.
I mean, think about it. He's the title of the movie.
Yeah.
Some people think it's Karis, but it's not.
No, it's Marin.
Savage, sure. Let's talk about performances. You have a bunch here that you want to latch onto across the board.
Everybody. I mean, everybody's perfect. I'm sticking with Ellen Burstyn. It's just, you just can't take her. You can't take your eyes off of her. And from those explosive moments of just pure rage and just uncomprehending what is wrong with my daughter, to the immediate vulnerability of the helplessness that every parent must feel if you mm-hmm. can't control what's happening to your child. And the transitions are just masterful. I've always loved Ellen Burstyn, and maybe this is why, from early childhood, you know.
Yeah.
She's a beautiful lady too. She's real easy on the eyes.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's everybody's perfect in this. Everybody's perfect. And we can get into the actual practical effects. I mean, because those are just astounding. And they never, ever, ever stop working. You know,
they don't.
That's why they're so great.
Yeah. It's even today. I mean, they're better than the stuff that you would see today.
And that's why it's so warm and refreshing to see that and revisit things like this again.
I don't know that you could pull that off today with a child actor.
You could.
With a child actor?
You could, but they would go the easy route and just say, well, let's just CGI it or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, eh.
Well, you want to see a case for a
head around.
You want to see a case for CGI not working. Look at old Yoda in CGI Yoda.
Oh, my God.
You see what I'm saying?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Old Yoda is better Yoda.
Way
sure.
better Yoda.
Adam, I want to ask you real quickly. Okay. Let's get into scenes here. Which ones stand out for you? Talk about a scene and tell us why that one really comes up front for you.
Probably the best scenes for me are the ones where the priests are actually having conversations with the demon in her and just their interactions between them all.
I know what he's talking about, though. When they go in there and he says, oh, hey, Karis, he's talking in that.
It's a good day.
Your mother's
in here with us. And blah, 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 blah. That's crazy.
It's creepy.
Terrifying.
And she's just laying there staring at him. And
what she says is, well, you know your mother's in here with me. If you leave a message, I'll make sure she gets it.
Yeah.
And you just, ooh. So what you're saying is the conversation creeped you out more than the visuals.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Visuals are amazing, but that conversation right there just was like,
the spirit of it, the story of it, the character interaction is more effective to you than what you're looking at.
Yeah, and that voice. I mean, the voice, hands down, just
creepy.
It just goes on and on like that.
And the woman that recorded that voice for Reagan said she smoked like 3 packs of cigarettes a day.
Oh,
drank whiskey just to get her throat roughed up to go in there and record that. That's almost her natural speaking voice.
That's
that
a pro.
Moment. She was committed.
Yeah. must have been Marge Simpson's mom.
Yeah, really.
So I got the sense that it's never addressed, but didn't you feel like Karis knew something was over his shoulder the whole time? He looked like he was scared from the opening shot to the end. He knew something.
Well, he was haunted, for sure.
He was haunted, yeah.
I think that was played out through the whole movie. Yeah. I mean, from his, just the fact that he was a priest and he was sort of having, he kind of got the feeling he was having doubts about being a priest.
Yeah.
Well, he even said, I think I lost my faith.
Yeah, I think he said that, yeah.
When you're hearing the confessions of other priests.
Yeah.
Man, what kind of heavy load is that?
Well, and I think that goes back to what I said earlier was every character in this movie had some sort of an arc. Man, that is tough to pull off.
Yeah, it is.
Even, like I said, even the minor characters, like the cop. And his big arc was trying to get the father to go see a movie with him.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. He was like, well, already seen it. We should go to the theater.
He was an interesting character. I really liked it. When he stepped in, I wouldn't say it added, I would never say comic relief, but it showed
The human side.
It showed the human side, the world as it is without this in it. Yeah. And it also showed him, he had no idea what he was actually dealing with. Because he says, oh, your daughter's sick? Oh, it's probably mold or something. Just keep the windows shut.
The draft.
You're like, wow, he really is clueless.
Yeah.
You know. Boy, I tell you what, we could do a second episode
man,
on the show.
We could talk about this. I mean, we could talk about every single scene in this film.
It would be easy.
Yeah.
You know, we haven't even talked to the horror. I mean, we could do another show on just the horror aspect of it. Worst scene ever in the history of cinema. I'm going to call it that. You know what scene I'm talking about.
It's tough.
The crucifixion scene.
The crucifixion scene. How did they get away with that?
It's a crucibation scene.
Crucibation scene. I got to go with Ebert on that. I don't see how that got through.
I don't. I think.
Especially with a child.
Yeah.
I seem to recall reading that this originally got an X, and they fought it and fought it and fought it. I don't know. Maybe I'm remembering something that's not real.
Yeah,
but
because Midnight Cowboy got an X.
Yeah, Midnight Cowboy got an X, right? And that was nothing.
Not like this.
Nothing compared to this.
You know what else?
This is a little kid doing it.
Want to ask you guys about this. Scenes in here that are grounded in our reality, in our world, that don't get into the demonic side of it, are just as wrought with horror to me. And I'm talking about the scenes of Regan getting tested.
Oh.
Oh, that was brutal.
You have the mother behind the glass, and you felt the emotion and the weight of her just looking at her child like that. They played that up. They didn't just say, well, Regan went to the doctor.
Uh-uh.
They focused on the horror of that just as much in this movie.
The loudest machines ever.
And they got worse and worse.
God, like, oh, yeah.
Put a muffler, some oil in that thing.
The thing that struck me watching this again, I hadn't seen it probably a couple of years, but anyway. It's the casualness of the doctor.
Oh,
sitting
yeah.
behind the desk smoking a cigarette. Yeah. Well,
that's everyday life for them.
Well, I know, but... You know, looking at that now, but then again, you know, if you really think about it, back in 73, for a doctor just to be so cavalier about that, just smoking a cigarette, well, your kid's this, we'll give him some Ritalin.
Yeah.
And that was another thing. When I saw this at the theater when they did the re-release and Ritalin came up, I was like, crap, Ritalin?
Thorazine really? And Ritalin.
Wow. Ritalin? This has been a problem this long? I didn't even realize it.
Yeah.
And I think that plays into the horror aspect as well. Is this just this laissez-faire attitude towards just give them some drugs?
You know what? There's horror all throughout this thing because there's horror in the other realm, in the other world. There's horror in our world with these tests.
Well,
and then there's also horror psychologically. She was being put through hell because these doctors could not do anything for her. Those scenes were great to me. When she's like, what the hell are you talking about? Someone help my kid.
Yeah.
You felt it because these doctors are like, no, you know, we got it under control. And you realize, wow, that's horrifying to think that through all of our technology, no, you don't.
Well, the horror is the hopelessness of
hopelessness. There you go.
There is, because if there was any hope, there's something to latch onto. Mm-hmm. And then finally, in that great scene, is like, are you telling me to take my daughter to a witch doctor?
And even the doctors had to say, I don't know what else to tell you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And enter a priest, you know. Mm-hmm.
And here comes Karis. What did you think of Karis's, basically when he decides that, okay, this is exorcism worthy.
Yeah.
And he decides that, okay, I have to hold on to my faith a little bit longer. I liked all that too. You know, I liked seeing him almost give up and then realize there's one thing to fight for. It's this kid. And he goes full force.
It's a little different because it's like you can think you know what you're playing for, but then when you know what you're playing for, it's different. Then it's not a matter of faith anymore. It's a matter of knowledge.
Yeah.
You don't have to believe it because you know it. Mm-hmm. And if you've seen the enemy, then you know your ally must be there as well.
Right, exactly right.
It's an interesting movie. Let's talk about the effect. They hold up. I mean, I don't know. We talked about this. We touched on it a minute ago. Some of the stuff they pulled off in this movie on camera, in screen, is just amazing.
Absolutely.
To this day, I still look to see what is her real head and what is not.
Yeah.
Well, the turning head is fake.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I know that. That's but it's fake. Still like, wow.
Well, I mean, but what part are you looking at saying which part is her real head and which one is not?
When the turning, when her head starts turning, it's
oh,
like,
which, so where does it cut?
Right. Yeah, I got you. It's still amazing. And but, then the whips on her legs that just open up. Was like,
it's unbelievable. The help me coming out of the chest.
Oh,
the stomach.
And then you read how they did some of this stuff. It's like, wow, that's crazy. How did these guys think of this?
So, Max, when you talk about the technical merit and you say, man, I love the how they did this, how they pulled this off. Adam talks about the head scene and all that, but anything subtly intriguing to you as far as how they've crafted this that maybe we might have missed?
Well, the whole the vomiting scene, that's crazy how they did that. It is literally insane. Mm-hmm. They actually made a prosthetic piece that went in her mouth that she had to bite down on. And you couldn't see it on camera, but then they had a tube that came up her back around her neck from the opposite side of the camera shooting on and went into her cheek like right at the side of her mouth into this little thing she had to bite down on and then went back behind it, looped through it, and they would just pump this pea soup mix. And it literally was pea soup.
Anderson's pea soup.
Pump that pea soup through there.
Yeah.
And it looked like she was projectile vomiting.
Yeah.
I mean,
it looked exactly like
that. Do you think they would go through that much trouble for an effect these days?
No, absolutely not.
And CG. But you know what? It worked then, and it holds up now because it looks completely real.
Yeah.
The shaking bed was crazy how they did that.
And they actually hurt these people doing this.
Yeah, that's the thing. She screwed up to this day.
The part where she's just getting whipped back and forth in the bed.
Yeah. Violently.
Do you know how they did that? They literally put a strap around her waist and put a...
Like a hydraulic thing
behind her.
Like a piston.
Literally just jerked her back and forth, back and forth.
Yeah.
Her screaming stop, man. Is real.
When she's screaming for them to stop, she's literally screaming for them to stop.
So everybody was invested in this thing, and everybody stepped up and said, let's make something special here.
Yeah.
Let's make something unique here.
Yeah.
Let's scare the bejesus out of people, not now in 1973, but how about 2015 as well?
Did you see how they actually got the scared reactions from people? The director would walk up behind him with a gun and shoot it in the air.
Apparently, Friedkin was kind of a taskmaster on this.
You'd have to be.
Friedkin's the man.
He's the freaking man. But you know, back to some more subtle things about this film. You know what really haunts me about this thing where there, I might have looked over my shoulder a couple times, even again, watching this, was Karis's dream.
Yeah.
Silent, with nothing but a falling pendant and his breath in the background. A subtle horror, outrageous horror, torn flesh. It's beautiful.
Yeah. And again, there was a hopelessness to Karis's because he'd already lost his mother. I mean, so.
I like what you're saying here. I was trying to really. It wasn't sadness. It wasn't hopelessness. He had guilt. That was his big thing, guilt.
Absolutely, it was
guilt. So at the end, was he washing away his guilt? Was this some kind of a redemption of his character when he says, come into me?
Yeah.
He's trying to wash away his guilt.
Yeah. Okay. And you know, maybe save his mother if he can, or save what he can because he's guilt-ridden that he couldn't save his mother or he couldn't be there for his mother, and so you save the innocent, the innocent child, and you know he was a fighter. I mean, that whole thing is like a boxer. You're a boxer, and he's like, no.
So why did we have to know he was a boxer? They wanted us to know it when he talked to the detective and when he went to his mother's house.
Yeah.
You remember that when they had the pictures of him boxing on the wall?
Mm-hmm.
Why was it important for us to know he was a boxer?
Show that he wasn't a priest at one point. You know, he was just a regular person.
Or he was a different kind of priest somehow.
Yeah.
He was a fighter. He was a warrior.
You know, at the end, too, when Marin dies, and she's sitting there giggling and laughing, she thought she won.
So creepy.
The only thing that could have taken that demon out was Marin, and he's dead. And she said, that's it. I've won. And here comes Karis. There. Now, that's a superhero right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's everything in this was hit the perfect beat, the perfect timing. Just a superlative movie.
Yeah.
It'll 100 years from now, it'll still be considered one of the greatest movies ever made.
If you want to see the difference between being timeless and dated, this is it.
I think so. I'm so surprised it holds up this well.
Yeah.
It holds up incredibly well.
And the only thing that even dates this at all is the
clothes,
the technology, and sometimes the clothes, but the technology when they try to use it, like the recorder, and even the clothes you can kind of forgive because fashion is fashion, whatever.
I would totally forgive it.
If it weren't for that like recorder, this could be a movie made today. You could make it today, and they would be like today's thing.
Yeah,
you know,
but they wouldn't make it like that.
No,
that's the problem.
No,
they
no.
would totally.
No, there would be people taking selfies with the demon and stuff.
Wimp out. Yeah, exactly. We can't do that in a movie. What? We're going to have the girl masturbate with a crucifix?
No, that would never happen. You would never get a child star actor on that hydraulic piston thing.
That's what's so great about 70s movies. You can just like
the complete disregard for safety of everybody.
No, right, exactly
complete,
right.
The complete disregard for what anybody thinks about my movie. Right. I'm going to make this. Like, you think you could make Blazing Saddles today? No, forget it.
You know what? We could probably go on and on.
Oh,
too bad that we can. I think we covered a lot. I think we're going to all stick with 10. Any reason why we wouldn't, producer?
No, not at all. Who
We're talking about The Exorcist, or we did. Yeah. And I think it inspired a lot of people, too. I think it's just a timeless artifact of a film that we'll, like Max say, look at for 100 years. All right, guys, let's do it right now. Take one last listen to the film, Exorcist 1973. Come on back and quickly get through our top three list, top three practical effects in movies. Something tells me we might be common on a few of them.
I don't know.
Max, this is sharp.
Come on back. We'll find out. Here you go.
Look, I'm only against the possibility of doing your daughter more harm than good.
Nothing you could do could make it any worse.
I can't do it. I need evidence that the church would accept as signs of possession.
Like what?
Like her speaking in a language she's never known or studied.
What else?
I don't know. I'd have to look it up.
I thought you were supposed to be an expert.
There are no experts. You probably know as much about possession as most priests. Look, your daughter doesn't say she's a demon. She says she's the devil himself. Now, if you've seen as many psychotics as I have, you'd realize that's the same thing as saying you're Napoleon Bonaparte. You ask me what I think is best for your daughter. 6 months under observation in the best hospital you can find.
You show me Reagan's double. Same face, same voice, everything. And I'd know it wasn't Reagan. I'd know in my gut. I'm telling you that thing upstairs isn't my daughter. Now I want you to tell me that you know for a fact that there's nothing wrong with my daughter except in her mind. You tell me you know for a fact that an exorcism wouldn't do any good. You tell me that.
There it was, The Exorcist 1973, a film we talked about tonight. Inspired our top three practical effects in film. Hey, why are you peeing on the carpet over there, Adam?
I had to go.
Guy wanders into the room.
Are you okay? You feeling okay?
We're all going to die in there tonight. You know?
Adam brought that up there in the break. Yeah. That we didn't
that
talk
was
about
creepy.
The peeing on the carpet. it's crazy. I forgot about that. That's one of the most effective scenes in the whole movie.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Adam, it's up to you. We're talking about top three practical effects in movies. I want to know what your number three is, inspired by The Exorcist. Let her rip.
I'm going to have to say the face melting scene from Indiana Jones.
That's good. It's good.
It's great. It scared me as a kid. Mm-hmm. It's still great.
You know how they did that? It was made out of gelatin. They melted it in over like a... Six hour period.
Yes.
And they sped it up.
Perfect.
Mm-hmm.
It's fantastic.
Just had to scratch that off.
Right. Yeah, we could have some commonality, as
yeah,
I say.
Well, there's some, yeah.
Savage, how about you next, man? What do you got? Number three, practical effects inspired by the film The Exorcist.
I like the hallway fight in Inception.
That's a good one.
Really. That's one of those make gravity, anti-gravity scenes.
Yeah, and just how they did it. They built a hallway, set it on a gimbal, and shot it. I mean, it's like... It's cool.
Yeah, the awesome thing about that was they had done that with rooms before.
Yeah.
But they built like this huge, long hallway.
Yeah, 2001 we did with the spaceship.
Yeah, 2001 did it with the hamster wheel.
Brilliant scene in 2001.
Yeah. Unless I hope someone didn't pick that 2001 hamster wheel.
Well, what did you pick, Max?
My number three.
Yeah.
2001 hamster wheel.
No, it's not my number three. Well, it's a toss-up. I'm going to have to go with the Muppets riding a bicycle in the Muppets.
Yeah.
Amazing.
In the Muppet movie.
Yeah, Kermit.
How did they do that?
Never considered that, but that's a hell of a good answer.
And
I
you know what?
Over the weekend.
No one, they will not tell anyone how they did it.
I have to rewatch that. That was good.
It wasn't just Kermit. It was all of them in one shot.
Maybe CGI. Maybe they had secret CGI back then.
No.
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 No. And it's amazing. It's seamless. It's awesome.
Henson's good, man.
How did they do it? Nobody knows.
You know what? I'm going to go a little off the rack here. I'm going to try to keep it going. I'm going to go down a sci-fi path here.
Okay, yeah. There's a lot of it.
And I'm going to go with scenes that I just remember being wowed by. They may not be the greatest. They may not be the best use of practicality. But for me, in my younger years, really impacted me. And I'm going to say Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
What scene?
Well, I'm talking about when the... the model spaceship comes up over Devil's Tower, and it was just overwhelming. I remember being in the theater as a kid, just completely overwhelmed by that. Those are all miniatures.
That was awesome how they did that.
I mean, fantastic, and it's just so dramatic coming up over the top of this mountain is very effective. That was a great use of miniatures right there.
Well, the beard knew what he was doing.
The beard did know. He has a thing for aliens, too.
The beard still knows what he's doing.
Can I call you the stubble?
Sure. Can I call you Dan Haggerty?
Go right ahead. Thanks. I'm on my way, aren't I?
Paul Newman, right?
The Silver Fox, yeah.
Sal Mineo.
Charlie Rich.
Adam the Bomb. How about that?
Number two.
Number two for you. What is it?
Yeah, I have to throw in Ray Harryhausen. The skeletons.
Yeah.
From the Sinbad movies. Yeah. Oh, my God. That
stop action.
Amazing looking.
From the Sinbad movies.
Yeah, I know what he's talking about, but I agree. They're awesome. It's amazing, but you could tell they're special effects.
I know, but that's I love watching that stop motion.
I did, too. I think it's great. Best special effects are effects that you can't tell are special effects.
Well, you know.
Back then, watching him fight these skeletons was amazing.
No, you talk about Jason and the Argonauts?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. Not Sinbad.
Yeah, you said Sinbad.
Yeah,
I was like,
my bad.
I was sitting here the whole time going, what is Sinbad?
But Sinbad fought skeletons, too.
Yeah. Oh, okay. All right, and you're talking about Jason and the Argonauts.
And
Perseus. Yeah, but at that time, that was pretty cutting edge. I mean, it was real trendsetting. And stop animation, archaic stop animation. You can't give him credit for that.
Yeah, I can give him credit. Yes, I can. Yes. Yeah. I think it's amazing, too.
Better than Valley of Guanja.
But, you know, to me, the best special effects are things you that are so seamless and tie in so well that you can't, not that you can't tell their special effects because you always know their special effects.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
And that, I think, I'm not knocking Harryhausen at all.
But if you're fighting skeletons, it's obviously
time?
Fake, right?
Yeah.
These are my personal favorites.
There's personal favorites.
I get it.
I mean, that's a timeless answer, just like the film that inspired it. I mean, that's a good answer. Savage, what's your number two?
American Werewolf in London, The Transformation.
Yes, indeed.
Absolutely.
Woo!
John Landis. Talk about something holding up.
Oh, it still does. And that's a good movie. That movie still holds up, you know?
You know why that scene's so effective? The effects are there, but once again, what's underneath is a great performance while the effects are going on.
Yeah.
He's terrified, and you felt it.
Yeah.
It wasn't just like, well, here's something horrible to look at, horrifying.
And that's something. That's like they did 13 days. It took like 13 days to film that.
Really?
10 hours of makeup every morning. They could film like 2 seconds of transformation a day, 3 hours of makeup stripping. And it took like 13 days.
It's crazy. But it paid off.
Yeah, it did.
It was worth it.
Yeah.
My number two, I'm going to jump on board with him, get it out of the way. No reason to go over it twice. I had American Werewolf in London.
Not American Werewolf in Paris, where they did CGI.
God, so terrible.
And it sucked.
There's another example of CGI versus practicality.
Yeah.
I mean, those guys were master craftsmen, the guys that could pull off something like that.
Yeah, man.
American Werewolf in London. I remember this one of the first things we had on VHS, and I would watch that scene over and over again, just in amazement.
It's incredible. Anytime you do something in camera, beat CGI.
Every time.
It's hard to pull off hair growing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's tough. They didn't reverse.
That's what I was going to say. They had to have
done
reverse,
they
obviously. And even though you kind of know it while you're watching it, they did it in such a badass way that bravo on you. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
That's great.
Speaking of great things and bravo and all the good things, Max, what's your number two?
You're so sweet.
What is number two for you? What is it?
Anything in The Thing.
Yes.
John Carpenter's The Thing.
Okay.
Pick a scene.
Right.
Let me pose this to you. You have the head on the end of a crab leg attached to a spider.
That's the one I like.
You have the mouth that comes out of the guy's stomach and eats the guy's arm.
You have the dogs.
You have the dogs.
Head peels back. I mean, just, God, it goes on and on.
It's brilliant.
Or even the real subtle one, the running away blood, where he wants to stab it.
Oh, yeah.
The blood just,
look at
it. Oh, yeah.
That was great. Oh, yeah.
Something
awesome.
As simple as that. It's like, how'd they do that?
I don't know. Ask Rob Bowden.
Yeah, right.
Knows his stuff. God. Yeah. Why didn't that guy get more work? Jeez.
Go ahead, Adam. What you got? Number one for you.
Something as simple as taking tree branches and raping a woman.
God, that's good.
Something simple as taking tree branches and raping a woman.
Yeah. Adam, your inner dialogue needs to be a little quieter. I'm sorry.
Really?
Your inner narrative needs to be a little quieter, sir.
How awesome was that shot, though?
Oh, it was fantastic.
Did it not scare the bejesus out of you when you were little?
Yeah, it did. It did. Well, I wasn't really little when I seen it, but it creeped me out. And I knew right away that that was very well done. My first reaction wasn't so much creeped out, but man, that was well done.
Yeah.
If I had to pick one from The Evil Dead, it's the pencil in the ankle scene. That's still...
How'd they film that?
It hurts.
A fake leg and a
fake
pencil.
Leg and then
just jamming it in there.
But it still works. It still is like, oh my God, that looks like it hurt.
All right, moving along. Number one, Savage. Inspired by the film we talked about tonight, The Exorcist. Practical effects gone wild. What is it?
Yeah, inspired by the color. And let's face it, the face of a franchise, the $10 billion puppet, Yoda.
Mm-hmm.
Yoda.
Good answer it was.
Got to give him props for Yoda.
Yoda. I mean, it's the franchise, by Lucas's own admission, hinged on whether Yoda would be believable or not. And $10 billion later.
Masterful.
Yeah.
Thanks to Jim Henson.
Absolutely.
You know what Yoda's face is, don't you? You know what that is. You know it's basically
like
a replica.
Frog ninja.
No.
What?
Take a look at it. Everything except the ears, that's in the mouth, is Albert Einstein.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That is Albert. They wanted it to appear psychologically and somewhere in your psyche
That
this is a very wise person. So the head from the nose down is something else, but from the nose up, it's a complete replica of Albert Einstein.
Well, $10 billion puppet.
Yeah.
How they ruined in the first one and then turned around and replaced him with CGI was...
And we talked about that earlier.
Right.
Yeah. Compare the CGI Yoda to the puppet Yoda.
Yep.
Well, originally it was a puppet when they put episode one out, and
terrible.
It looked crap.
It was
And they
awful.
Tried to replace it with CGI, and it still looked like crap.
It still was terrible.
Yeah. You know what my number one is? We already talked about it. It's a thing. I'm going to go with a thing.
Yeah. No, it's awesome.
No reason to go over the conversation twice. Looking at my notes, it's number one for me. The thing could have went other ways, but in the end, that's the film that...
Head crap.
That
head
I thought
crab?
It's head crab. It's head crab.
Or the dog with the things coming out of it. Oh, that was brutal. Ugh.
Head crab, man.
Head crab. I gotta go to head crab. I'm with you on head crab. Head crab freaked me out.
Anybody not give us their number ones?
Me.
What is it?
This is amazingly enough a William Friedkin film. It's the bridge scene in Sorcerer.
I have not seen this.
Amazing. All practical effects. You have no idea there are even special effects involved in this, where they built the bridge over the rushing river. There are actually hydraulics built into this bridge, and this huge truck is crossing over it. It's phenomenal. It's one of the most incredible things I've ever seen.
You know, I love
film.
The fact that
he keeps bringing it up.
I love I can't wait to see it. Make me watch it. Maybe it comes up on Netflix soon.
I wish it would.
You know
I would so pick it.
You know why his answer's fantastic? It's a freaking film. It's a freaking number one. That's freaking great.
That's freaking awesome.
You know what else is great? Next week we get to do it again, and we're talking about a big reveal.
Yeah.
We're talking about, and once again, just to wrap it up, Exorcist, perfect score, first time ever in the Q Filmcast. Savage, it's up to you. Let's see if we can do it back-to-back twice one more time.
Yeah, probably not.
What are we watching next week?
Well, we've done, I guess, 50s. We've done 70s, and I guess we did 80s with you. I'll bring it into the 90s, and after much, much deliberation, I'm going with Trainspotting.
Okay, Trainspotting. You're going to hate me for this. I've seen it once a long time ago, and that's all I've seen of this film. That is a good pick for me because it's one I've been wanting to see. Danny Boyle.
Same thing. I've seen it once, maybe
Same
20
here.
Years ago.
Oh, well, welcome.
Well, I love Danny Boyle. And, you know, recently I've been thinking to myself, so ironic, I've been thinking, that's a film I need to get it back and revisit.
Trainspotting.
Well, I guess we got our chance now.
I think it's a 10 for me.
A lot of people do.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's go. Adam, you ready? Next week, Trainspotting.
I am.
Yeah.
Adam's response, I love that.
You did sound you sounded a little bit like Casey Kasem right then.
He did,
I
really.
Am.
Welcome to this week's Top 40. Yeah. No, I did not.
And there's your long-distance dedication.
So Trainspotting. Reaching for the stars.
Yeah. So that's next week. Savage says Trainspotting's a 10. You want to find out if we agree? Come back. Visit us at theqfilmcast.com.
Pazuzu.
Not Pazuzu.
That would be awesome.
That's awesome.
Pazuzu.
.net. QFilmcast.net. Let's get back, guys. Next week, we're going to talk about Trainspotting. This was The Exorcist Top 3 Practical Effects in Film. Until next week, however it is you say, keep reaching for the stars and keep your feet on the ground.
Captain Howdy left this morning for a cruise around the world. Said he had to make a lot of new friends of a lot of little boys and girls. So at night, if you are sleeping, kids, and a stranger comes in your room,
say, hi there, Captain Howdy, man. Didn't expect you so soon. Captain Howdy lives in all of us, no matter what people say. Just he likes the nighttime. Most people like the day. Captain Howdy, Captain.